It's June 2018 in a city in the Middle East. I can't say where exactly. A man in a dark grey shirt and beige sun hat is feeling the heat. He has a greying beard and jet black eyebrows. He's about to have one of the most important meetings of his life. In his hands is a green folder containing secret documents. This is Samir Shigwara, and he's on his way to meet two French journalists. The documents he's carrying come straight from the heart of Gaddafi's Libya. They've been recovered from the wreckage of the regime's notorious intelligence network in the offices of spy chief Abdullah Senussi. They're a mixture of notes and memos, some handwritten, others typed, all in Arabic. But they contain information that could turn many people's understanding of Lockerbie upside down. And Samir thinks the world needs to know about them. Despite a painstaking police investigation, McGrath's conviction and the failed appeals that followed are still tainted for some with doubt and conspiracy theory. I want to find out why.
The scene is one of utter devastation. There is debris from the aircraft.
What looks to be Britain's worst air crash.
The air is
tonight.
Thick with smoke, flames, and the smell of aviation fuel.
From Intrigue on BBC Radio 4, this is Lockerbie. I'm Miles Bonner. Episode 5, The Senussi Files. The two journalists Samir is about to meet are from the French publication Mediapart. Samir had read their investigation into Colonel Gaddafi's links to former French President Nicolas Sarkozy and made contact through a middleman. In a baking hot room, Samir hands the journalists the folder. He's already published two booklets in Libya. There was one about the Lockerbie bombing and the second about Libyan links to another plane attack, one that took place the year after Lockerbie.
In a grim parallel to Lockerbie, flight 772 of the French airline UTA was blown out of the sky over Africa, killing 171 people.
Little attention had been paid to Samir's booklets, but the French journalists can't believe their eyes. They take copies of the files and print a series of articles. Later, they approach Samir about working with them on a book to be published in France. It takes a few years, but in 2025, the book, The Murderer Who Must Be Saved, is finally released. This time, the documents do get a reaction, and not just in France.
10 minutes to 8, and Scottish detectives are examining what's alleged to be the first written evidence from inside Libya's intelligence service that it was responsible for the Lockerbie bombing.
If they're authenticated, the newly revealed documents would bolster McGrath's conviction and provide new evidence against others said to have been involved.
I need to find out more, so I call up one of the book's authors, investigative journalist Vincent Nuziel.
Yes, it's a long story. It's an amazing story because part of this archives from the Abdallah Senussi files. You know that Abdallah Senussi was a Gaddafi brother-in-law, and he was the head of the Secret Service, and it was considered as a sort of black box of Gaddafi secret at this time.
These documents, better known as the Senussi files, are packed with classified information.
Many meetings, many missions, detailed preparation on the bombing, on the test of explosives, on the suitcase, and on a lot of...
Most significantly, Vincent says, the Senussi files implicate Megrahi, Fima and Massoud. Three names you're well aware of by now. Megrahi is the only person ever found guilty of the Lockerbie bombing. Fima was charged alongside him, but acquitted. He's always maintained his innocence. And that last name, Massoud, he's to stand trial in Washington, where he'll plead not guilty.
Last question.
Vincent is really busy, so we don't get long to talk. Last question.
I'm sorry, Ian, but I have to leave in yeah. 4 minutes.
4 minutes, okay. We've barely scratched the surface, and I really need to see copies of these files with my own eyes.
Thank you. flight down to Paris this morning should be around about an hour and 30 minutes. However, we're going
to
be...
So a few weeks later, I'm on a flight to Paris.
A bit fancier than Glasgow Airport, Charles de Gaulle.
I'm joined on this trip by producer Caitlin. She and I meet Vincent at a hotel in the city centre.
Look, how are you all set up?
I'm good to go.
We only have Vincent for a few hours and there's a lot to get through. He starts by telling us about his first impressions of the Senussi files.
We were shocked. We were very impressed because we said, if these documents are true, it's amazing. Nobody had never seen any Libyan document about these bombings.
If you look at Vincent spreads the folders out on the hotel bed and across a desk.
They are completely coherent with what we know from other sources, the FBI sources, CIA sources, the court sources, French sources. So that's why they are very interesting.
And the Senussi files don't just confirm what we already know.
They are adding new information.
The first thing that strikes me as we sift through, Megrahi is all over this paperwork. Vincent points at some handwriting.
Signed by Megrahi.
So you know this is Megrahi?
Yes.
Several of these documents have a letterhead. Information and Strategic Studies Centre. Whatever this centre was, it appears Megrahi ran it.
This one, for example, is coming from the office of Megrahi, with the stamps in yellow and in green, with the dates. And we have many, many, many of these documents coming from his office.
To the outside world, this Information and Strategic Studies Centre was a think tank. Vincent says it was a front, all paid for by Libyan intelligence as a way to hide what Megrahi was really up to.
But it was just a structure, a front office of the intelligence service. We know very well from his own testimony, from the court trial in Samsat, that he was financed by the intelligence service and he was in charge of operation.
Is he discussing think tank affairs in this document?
No. This document, for example, is very, very clear. This is operational division, meetings about the line and the target and the plan to target. So it's very clear that it was not a philosophical think tank.
The centre's aims were something very different. Vincent turns to another stack of documents from the Senussi files. These detail a series of meetings and trips taken in 1987 and 1988. According to Vincent, what they reveal is clear. During those years, Libya, via this think tank, is actively planning to bring down a plane.
We have some documents before the Kirby talking about preparation of bombings, sending people places in Malta, in Africa, in Swiss, in Zagreb, different places. And maybe they were looking for a good target. And we have explanations about the motivation of Gaddafi. For the French, it was very easy to understand because the French, at the time, was helping the Chadian president, Hissène Habré, to freeze the Libyan army in northern Chad, which is very close to Libya.
Libya and Chad were at war on and off for years in the 70s and 80s, each battling for control of a mineral-rich strip of desert. At times, the conflict turned into something else, a proxy war involving France and Saudi Arabia.
And the French army was helping to defeat the Libyan army. And for Gaddafi, it was unbelievable to lose maybe 20 to 30% of his own army, and he wanted revenge. He was obsessed by the way to revenge and to defeat the French in any way. And terrorism was the way to do it.
The centre is tasked with finding a suitable target. Initially, it seems their focus is France.
This one is dated 2nd of October of 88. 2 months before Lockerbie. And this document is saying, top secret, Center for Information and Strategic Studies, written by McGray, of course, because he's the only guy responsible for this center. A meeting was held in the presence of members of the Operation Division and the Revolutionary Council. And it was agreed to choose the lines that start from Zagreb in Yugoslavia and passes through Zurich and then Paris, crossing into the required station. The idea that they had in October 88 was to target maybe a French plane, but starting the flight from Zagreb in Yugoslavia to Zurich, Zurich to Paris, Paris to Jamena. Okay?
And then that's relevant because that's looking at planes that have stopovers.
Yeah.
A multi-stop plane journey, just like what investigators believe happened with Pan Am 103. The bomb, hidden inside a cassette player, inside a suitcase, started its journey in Malta before being transferred in Frankfurt and again in London.
And there are several attacks about French airplane in different...
Vincent says the files show the plans to attack the French plane were well underway. So why did that never go ahead?
I mean, really, I tried to figure why do they change the plan? Why did they give up the plan from Zagreb, which was well organized? And there is proof of that, because after this meeting in October, Megrahi himself went to Zagreb and went to Yugoslavia. He was himself going to make the preparation. Same stamps, Center of International Study, same handwriting. And he makes a report of his own trip to Yugoslavia.
The plan to destroy the French passenger plane seems to depend on an operative in Belgrade. In November 1988, Megrahi writes to tell Libya's spy chief, Senussi, something is wrong.
He said, I have a call from this guy in Belgrade and there is a problem. We don't know exactly what was the problem. There is a problem.
Whatever the operative in Belgrade has told Megrahi, it means the mission to target France is put on hold. The Centre for Strategic Studies isn't willing to give up on its plan to take a plane down. All they need is another target. Everything else is in place.
And at the end, they give up about this target and they move to another plane.
As you read through the Senussi files, what becomes clear is the sheer amount of planning. The Libyans appear to carry out dry runs, figuring out how to get a bomb through airport security.
Several tests were carried out, to be sure, and all the tests were with the presence of the big guys. Abdallah Senussi, brother-in-law of Gaddafi, the head of Foreign Intelligence Operation and Operation Service. The delegates of the technical administration supervising the preparation. That means that all the technical steps and all the level of the intelligence service were engaged in the preparation. Very important.
From these documents, it's clear this is not a solo operation. Libyan's highest officials are involved. And the tests seem to go well.
We have here a document handwritten by McRae are reporting a very important success of the suitcase with a good quantity of explosives, with the fact that there is no problem with the scanning in the airport. No foreign objects appeared when the suitcase passed through the beam scanner. I mean, they scan it just to be sure that nothing was exposed by the scan.
So now they know airport scanners they tested can't detect explosives inside a suitcase.
If you look at this document, which is dated from October the 4th, 88.
Another report, just 8 weeks before Lockerbie, appears to show the Libyan bosses are out in the desert watching technicians run tests.
And who is mentioned in this handwritten document written by Megrahi? Sent to Senussi. Brother Aboujila Kerr of the service, meaning Massoud, carried out several experiments on a suitcase similar to the one to be used in this mission, meaning the mission to be here. What is important, the following results were obtained. The explosion was very strong and effective. The suitcase is okay. The quantity contained in the suitcase was sufficient for the purpose. The use of a tape recorder was good. Oh my God, Lockerbie.
God. The bomb that took down Flight 103 was later found to have been inside a Toshiba radio cassette player. And here is Libyan intelligence seemingly writing about testing explosives hidden inside similar devices only months before Lockerbie.
It's very clear. I mean, it's a modus operandi of the bombings of Lockerbie.
Also in the Senussi files, the timer. This had always been a bone of contention for doubters like Jim Swire. His daughter Flora had died in the explosion. Ever since, he's been pushing for the government of the day to reveal files on the case, believing that they'll reveal a truth that for a long time has been denied to him. But here in black and white, Libyan intelligence appeared to be planning to down a plane via a multi-stop journey with a bomb set with a long delay timer.
And does it mention 11 hours? Yeah, time required, 11 hours. Yeah.
The timer in the bomb. The same kind of timer, 11-hour device to program the explosion of the device 11 hours after the start. Meaning that they are planning to make the explosion of the device in the suitcase 11 hours after the takeoff, the first takeoff. Because they were planning to make several stops. And after 11 hours, the suitcase maybe makes one, two or three stops.
All this information adds weight to the conclusions reached by Scottish police and American intelligence. But there is an issue with it. None of these documents actually mention Pan Am Flight 103.
But what we know also is we have not all the documents, files of the intelligence service. Maybe there are elsewhere documents about this targeting.
When Samir Shagwara got hold of the Senussi files, he didn't get them all. Many had been destroyed. They might even still be hidden away somewhere. Could specific references to Pan Am 103 be contained in the documents he hasn't seen? It's impossible to know. For Vincent, the similarities between Lockerbie and the plans revealed in the Senussi files are striking. For him, it's too much of a coincidence.
So we have not the final proof that they want to target Pan Am flight, but we have evidence that this modus operandi was what they want. We have a preparation of a multi-stop flying trip and a suitcase embarked, and after 11 hours, the bomb exploded.
It's unbelievable, this stuff you've uncovered here. I mean, it's blown my mind, quite frankly. Vincent Naziel says he spent 3 years carefully cross-checking and verifying everything in the files. And there's something in particular that convinced them they're the real deal.
In a grim parallel to Lockerbie, Flight 772 of the French airline UTA was blown out of the sky over Africa.
The year following Lockerbie, a plane heading for Charles de Gaulle Airport exploded over Niger in West Africa, killing 170 people. During the criminal investigation into UTA Flight 772, the French intelligence service went to Libya
to discuss with Abdallah Senussi about the charge in the investigation. And the discussion was very sensitive.
Only a handful of people in the world would have known about any of this. But there, in the Senussi files, is a memo which includes a written account of this highly secretive meeting. So Vincent wondered, would the French intelligence officers who went to Tripoli corroborate what had been written?
And I got in touch with these guys, and I said, did you went to Tripoli at these dates? Who was present at this meeting? I didn't tell them that I had all the Libyan memorandum of this meeting. Do you remember what you were talking about? And they talked to me about this meeting, about the dates, about what Sanusi said, what was about. I didn't tell them that I had all the Libyan memorandum of this meeting.
Their recollection matched the details revealed in the Sanusi files. And Vincent says there are other sources that match too.
This document is a report of the small stop in Malta between 8 and 10 of October of 88.
It's about the movements of Megrahi and Massoud coming in and out of Malta.
This matches another cable, doesn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
This account lined up with the information provided by the CIA informant Jaka, a.k.a. Puzzle Piece, to his handler on Malta.
Because we know from the CIA cables that Jaka reported the same people, the same false passport at the same date. So, two sources independent, which match, it makes information more reliable than one source. So, two sources mention, and this is the most important, because it's official from the Secret Service of Libya.
The Sanusi files seem to corroborate several details first mentioned in the CIA's Jaka cables, including that Megrahi brought Semtex to Malta and stored it in FEMA's desk in the airport.
Very important document. And this document was signed by Megrahi, dated from January 87. And the subject, they are mentioning, for example, Brother Khalifa FEMA. And he said that 10 kilos of explosive material will be stored at Libya Airline Malta station manager Brother Khalifa FEMA. And of course, it's true, because we know that Khalifa FEMA was the station manager of his company.
So according to these documents, here's Megrahi naming his co-accused FEMA. He had been acquitted at the trial in 2001 due to lack of evidence.
FEMA, he received the explosive in his office in January 87. As Libyan Arab Airline station manager in Malta, he was in charge of explosives. Is it possible that a station manager is not aware of this storage of 10 kilos of very sensitive explosive in his own office? Very complicated, and the document said that he is aware of that. It is impossible to say that FEMA was not involved in the preparation. So we knew that this document is relevant, and they mentioned that this kilo of explosive are used according to the agreement and on the basis of my own instruction, meaning Megrahi.
That's a detail we haven't heard before. If these documents are to be believed, we have Megrahi taking responsibility for how explosives are to be used. FEMA is apparently playing a role too. And there's more.
FEMA always said he was not part of the intelligence service. But it's not true, because we have other proof of his involvement. There are copies of...
Is this tickets?
Airline tickets. Lamen FEMA... Malta, Belgrade, Zagreb. Oops.
Plane tickets in FEMA's name, and what appears to be payments made to him from the Libyan intelligence agency. Files that appear to put FEMA right there with Megrahi as they plan to down a plane. So what could this mean for FEMA? I asked the Scottish Crown Office. They said...
A main tenet of Scots law is that you cannot be prosecuted twice for the same crime. There are three exceptions to this, including where there is new evidence. The case remains a live investigation in Scotland, and whenever new evidence arises, it is carefully considered.
I tried to reach FEMA to put these serious allegations to him. After he was acquitted in 2001, he flew back to Tripoli. I asked his lawyer from the Camp Zeiss days, Eddie McKechnie, but he said he was no longer in touch with FEMA. He believed he was alive and in Libya, but he says nothing is certain. And there's another person Vincent says is implicated in the files.
It's impossible to say that Abdallah Sanusi was not involved.
In 1999, Sanusi and five others were found guilty in absentia for the bombing of French flight UTA-772. He's also been found guilty of crimes against humanity. To date, he's never been explicitly linked to the Lockerbie bombing, but Vincent is certain.
Sanusi was a mastermind of both attacks. You can see that in this document.
Then there's Massoud.
And Massoud was not only an expert in explosives. We have a document about him mentioning his trip, for example, to Malta, and mentioning his payment by the Libyan intelligence service. These documents, they are not exhaustive. They are maybe a small part of the truth, but they can contribute to the truth and to the justice.
Producer Caitlin and I had been recording for hours. We've kept Vincent long enough.
It was a pleasure to meet
and
pleasure
my,
to
meet you. Too. Yeah.
Please, after he leaves, the tape's still running as I try to work through what this might mean, particularly for Jim Swire's theory of Occam's razor. The idea that when faced with competing answers, the most likely conclusion is the simplest one with fewest assumptions.
The thing that came to me when he was laying it all out, Jim Swire had said it's Occam's razor, the PFL-PGC, that's the obvious answer. And actually, it's Occam's razor, but it's the person who's in Malta at the right time, it's the person who is an intelligence officer that they can fit into the chain, like Marquise said. So, yeah, it is Occam's razor, but not the way Dr. Jim Swire sees it. I wonder if the obvious answer has always been it's the people that they got for it.
The thing about this case is that every single piece of evidence has been contested and fought over. From the type of bomb used, to how the bomb got in the plane, to who planted it. So it shouldn't really be a surprise that some people are sceptical of the Sanusi files.
The sources that I have access to in Libya say that it's unusual that these documents are handwritten.
John Ashton was a member of McGrath's appeal defence team and over the years has written extensively about this case. He tells me about his Libyan sources who question the authenticity of the Sanusi files.
One of the sources says that handwritten notes could be used internally, but only for day-to-day low-level communication and only within the same department. This is clearly not low-level and it's clearly important communication if it's implicating them in bombings.
I've only seen copies of these documents. The originals are apparently hidden away somewhere safe. And we haven't been able to find copies of McGrath's Arabic handwriting to verify whether or not it's the same. But maybe the courts will. John's theory is the files could be fake. The latest in a long-running propaganda campaign by America and Britain to obscure the real culprits. Well, that's what John's sources in Libya seem to be saying.
The author of the documents is not named, which is unusual. And also, the documents all appear to be written by the same person. You know, if these were really key documents, why were they not destroyed before the fall of Tripoli? Why did they not cover their tracks? And finally, you know, they find it odd that documents emerge which mention all the key suspects in the case. You know, to them, it's just too convenient to be genuine. You kind of almost expect them to say at the end of the note, no one will ever discover our evil plans.
These sorts of views are not uncommon within the communities that scrutinise everything to do with Lockerbie. For me, things seem to be coming together, but until they're verified, we might not know the significance of these documents. If they're authentic, these files prove once and for all McGrahy was guilty. And not only him, it doesn't look good for FEMA, Sanusi, and Massoud. Could this new information convince Jim Swire? In his dogged attempt to uncover what he believes to be true, Jim visited McGrahy in prison in Scotland. Incredibly, the two became friends. Jim stood by McGrahy throughout his time inside. He even travelled to see him on his deathbed in Libya. What will it mean for Jim if he has to accept, almost 4 decades on from his daughter's murder, McGrahy was one of those behind it all along. Lockerbie was presented by me, Miles Bonner, and produced by Caitlin Smith and Rob Wilson. It was a BBC Scotland production for BBC Radio 4. Listen to Intrigue, Lockerbie, first on BBC Sounds.
The 8th of August, 1963. A gang of thieves hold up a British Royal Mail train on its way from Glasgow to London. More than £2 million was stolen, and Ronnie Biggs was the most famous face of the great train robbery.
Daniel Mays reveals the true story of Ronnie Biggs.
A train robbery, a prison escape, and 36 years on the run.
Gangster presents The Story of Ronnie Biggs.
Listen first on BBC Sounds.